Hello, everyone. This is Dr. Pamela Brewer welcoming you to this edition of Thoughtful Thursday here on Mind Talk. Every Thursday, you and I have the opportunity to meet with an expert who has agreed to share his or her expertise with us and help us really expand the way in which we think about the things that affect our lives. Today, I'm very happy to introduce to you someone who we could probably all stand to take some guidance from. And her name is Bonnie Compton. And Bonnie is the author of Mothering with Courage. Bonnie is a parenting expert with more than 30 years of experience counseling moms and kids, and she's a certified scream-free parent leader. Bonnie Compton, welcome to Mind Talk.
Thank you so much, Pamela. I'm grateful to be here today.
Now, what exactly is a certified scream-free parent leader?
I was going to say, that's a lot of a big title there. Scream-free parenting was developed by Hal Runkel. And he began, he's a family and marriage therapist and a parent himself, and he began to think that he as a parent was reacting to his child's behavior rather than responding. And when the child was out of control, he also was out of control, out of frustration and anger. And he thought there's got to be a better way. So he developed Scream-Free Parenting, Scream-Free Marriage, and the Scream-Free Institute in Atlanta, Georgia. And I became one of the leaders, the certified leaders, and what we teach parents is to pause, create a pause, and calm yourself down. Not parent from your own parental anxiety, but from your integrity. And to be able to stay calm and lead and guide your child, even when they are totally out of control. And it makes a huge difference. Parents learn to respond to their child versus react to their behavior.
You know, I can see it making a tremendous difference. I can also see it as at least sounding like an amazing hurdle for parents to sort of get over. I mean, screaming at your child for many parents kind of feels like part of their DNA.
Well, we all scream. It's just that yelling is the most popular version of screaming, but we scream when we emotionally shut down. We scream when we try to control or manipulate our child's behavior or anyone's behavior. If we try to, like helicopter parenting, hovering over and trying to make sure everything's okay, that's screaming. If we just throw our hands up and say, I'm done, I'm out of here, that's screaming. So we all scream in relationships. It's just that yelling is the most popular version.
So
when we learn to calm ourselves down, that's when we're able to respond versus react. And, you know, it doesn't take much to see in this world how reactive our world has become. You just turn on the news.
That's true, too. And that's a whole other conversation.
Yes. So it really is a daily commitment, one day at a time. I can just tell you briefly, yesterday I was sitting with a mom, actually parents, and it was her second session together, and they self-admittedly were, you know, very frustrated with their kids, and one of them in particular, and found that yelling, they didn't know what else to do. And within 1 week's time, they made the commitment they were going to shift the way they were being in the relationship. And the mom told me yesterday, she said, my daughter said in the car, Mommy, I've been acting so much better. My behavior is so good now. And the mom said what hit me was the daughter did not change her behavior at all. It was the parents that had changed, which then rippled out to the daughter.
Interesting. That really is fascinating. We may have to have you back to talk about scream-free parenting and scream-free marriages.
Sure. I'd love to.
Okay, terrific. So we'll set a date.
All right, perfect.
For right now, though, we're going to talk about Mothering with Courage. You know, when I first saw the title, I thought, oh, she must be talking about teenagers, because that is so often what people think about.
Right.
But the subtitle, of course, is very interesting, this mindful approach to becoming a mom who listens more, worries less, and loves deeply. So is this a book for new parents or parents of young children?
Pamela, I believe it's a book for moms, in particular, of all ages. And I say that, it really is about self-reflection. And the publisher first said to me, well, how can a mom, a new mom of a newborn, self-reflect? She just became a mom. And I said, she can self-reflect, look back 5 minutes ago, an hour ago, when she was pregnant, how she thought it was, you know, her life would be as a mom. She can look back to her childhood and take a look at how she was parented, what she loved about what her parents did and provided, and what she didn't love, and to go from there, how she wants to be as a mom, all the way to, I'm a mom of 4 adult kids and a grandmother. And someone at my age can look back, and this is not to say to beat ourselves up and say, oh, I wish I had done this, because as Maya Angelou says, when you know better, you do better. We didn't know any better. But to look back now, you're always a mom. I'm a mom of 4 adult kids now, and I tell parents in my parenting classes, I'm learning how to be a mom of adult kids. And they look at me like, you have to figure that out too? And I said, yes. And I'm a grandmother. So there's opportunities in relationships, whether with our adult kids, our grandchildren, or children that we meet, that we come in contact with.
So, you know, I can certainly think about some parents who have said, I'll be so glad when my child is fill in the blanks. 18, right. I won't have to worry anymore. 21, mm-hmm. married, whatever. But it sounds like you're saying that being a mom, being a parent, is a lifelong commitment, and it doesn't matter your age or the age of your child.
Sure, you don't stop being a mom. You're a mom in a different role. You're not there to manage their life. You know, it's their own life. But if you have a healthy relationship and you want to be part of their life, then it's important to know, even then, the messages that you're sending. This mom that I was working with told her mother, and she has a strained relationship with her mother, that she and her husband were working with me to be better parents. And I always tell parents, you are not a bad parent at all. The fact that you're sitting in my office or you called me, you are not a bad parent. You just want to learn to do it differently. So she told her mom this and something that I had suggested, and the mom said, oh, yeah, I see you do that all the time and with your daughter. Well, that just shut down the communication. She felt judged by her own mom. And so the relationships, you only have, you know, limited time with each other. And how do you want to be in relationship with your children, whether they're babies, teens, or adults? You have a choice. And it's about being mindful. One of the, you know, in the subtitle of my book, Becoming a Mom Who Listens More, that's not only listens more to her children, it's listening to herself. And that's really what inspired me to write this book, was after many, many years of working with parents, and moms in particular, they wanted to be the best mom for their child, but they often get lost in the daily trenches of motherhood and become overwhelmed, and then they begin looking outside of themselves for answers. And there's over 100,000 parenting books on the market now, and a lot of good ones, but most of them ask parents to focus on their child's behavior and to try strategies, and they work. But what I was finding over time was parents were saying, which book should I read? Which is the best? What book is the best? And I said, you're not, and I certainly recommend parenting books, I said, but you're not going to find the answer you're looking for about your one particular child. And what I began to see is they would employ strategies, would work for a while, and then the novelty would wear off for everybody, you know, and then they'd go into the next strategy or the next book. And then a lot of parents say, I don't even read parenting books because I don't even know what to follow. And so 9 years ago, and I believe this book was divinely inspired, I opened my mouth and I said, I'm going to write a book for moms. And I quickly turned my head around and thought, who said that? Not me. I'm not a writer. I got a C in English in 11th grade.
Well, and there you go.
That was the end of my writing. And, you know, I thought, I'm just not a good writer. This teacher told me I wasn't a good writer, and I believed it. So it takes 9 months to birth a baby. It took 9 years to birth Mothering with Courage that will be coming out May 9th, right before Mother's Day. And I just couldn't shake this book. I talked about it, and I'm like, oh, I don't know. And I had pieces of it, but it was 2 years ago. It came to me, this book needs to be written, and I'm the one that's supposed to write it. And so it's really to help moms understand that they have the answers within. Rather than looking outside themselves for the external answers, to look within, to learn to listen to their own inner voice, their own knowing. I actually saw a quote this morning on Facebook, and it said, her intuition was her favorite superpower.
Hmm.
And I love that. And moms have that. They often don't realize it, but they do.
When you, I'm going to go back a bit. You talked about the need for self-reflection, and you say early on in Mothering with Courage that this is something in which you would like parents to engage on a daily basis. Why is that important, and who's got the time?
How long, and I understand because parents are very busy, but how long would it take? And sometimes it's self-reflecting after you've said something and go, I could have said that a little differently or a little better. Not to beat yourself up, but to just to be aware of how you're interacting with your child, things that you're saying, and one of the other pieces we can talk about is the importance of messages that we send children. But just to wake up in the morning and briefly say, today I'm going to create fun. We're going to have a fun piece of the day, not the whole day. We're going to have a dance party while we're cooking dinner tonight. I'm going to just sit with my child and for 5 minutes and say, can you play with me? I actually worked with a mom, and when I began working with her, she called me. She was so frustrated and angry with her child. And she said, I've read every parenting book. I don't know what to do, but we have daily fights. And the child was 6 years old. And when she worked with me for a very short time and she began to shift her perspective and put on a different lens and see her child in a different light, they began to just have so much fun together. The child, there wasn't so much resistance on the child's part because the mom was no longer trying to control her. And the mom got to the point, and I love this, she would go in her daughter's room and say, will you play with me? And at first the little girl looked at her like, that, me, play with you? But they just got into this playful spirit, and their relationship is so much deeper now and filled with joy. And this mom, who got to the point she wasn't even enjoying motherhood, is now finding the joy in motherhood again. And it didn't take... You know, parents often say, I don't have time for this.
Right.
And my answer to that is, how much time are you expending on a daily basis trying to get your kids to listen, to follow through? How much time are you and energy are you expending? And are you enjoying your time together? And that is often what helps parents shift. And I say, you know, try it as an experiment. And I give parents homework assignments. One of the homework assignments I give them is to create special time. So special time with their son, Jonathan, and call it special time and say, I just miss hanging out with you. But that special time, it can be 5 minutes, 15 minutes, whatever you have, it is, you let the child direct it. You're not, so say if, you know, you're playing a game together and your child is cheating. Instead of saying, you know, no, you're cheating and trying to teach them the right thing, and often parents kind of go down this road, what if they cheat now then? What are they going to do when they're older? Are they going to lie? And they go down this whole road of their anxiety. Just to comment, say, I see you like to win. You love to win. You love to change the rules. And just be playful with it. But when parents, and they often resist, I give my child so much attention. I said, this is going to be a different kind of attention. This is attention before they're asking for attention. It's attention that is not related to an agenda. Did you do this? Did you do this? Did you do this? Or negative attention, because kids will seek negative attention. Attention is attention. They'll take negative attention if that's what they're getting. At least they're getting attention. But what I have found over and over again, Pamela, is parents come back and say, oh, my gosh, we're having so much fun. And I call that the soft time. And then during the tough times, the hard times, parents are able to resource that time that they had together and see, this is not who my child is. Their behavior is not who they are right now.
And that's certainly an important distinction to make, actually for everyone, whether they're parents or friends or neighbors. It's important to be able to make that distinction. You said a few moments ago that the parent you were talking about was spending a lot of time and energy on trying to control her child. Mm-hmm. Many parents think that that's what they're supposed to do. They can't just let their child run willy-nilly, if you will, all over the planet. They've got to control them.
Right. Well, I'm going to suggest that they drop the need for control and shift their perspective to guiding their child. What happens when you try to control someone? A child or an adult?
Usually doesn't work.
Let me ask you, Pamela. Do you like to be controlled?
Usually, absolutely not.
Right. I love it. I don't like to be controlled. And yet, that's what we do with our kids, because we were taught this myth, really. And again, this is not blaming past generations. They did the best they could with what they knew at the time. But it was about keeping that child in line. Children should be seen and not heard. And what has happened is an abuse that's severe, that the whole shift in the spectrum is abuse, abusing kids to get them to do what you want them to do, right? Whereas if you drop your need to control your child, see yourself as guiding, as teaching them. You know, the word discipline in some parenting fields, I'm a child and adolescent therapist, and the word discipline has taken on a negative connotation. Well, the root of the word discipline is disciple, is to teach. And we really are here to teach and guide our children. Now, I also believe on the flip side, children are our teachers, and I write about that in the book, and we can learn many things from them. But when parents no longer feel the need to control, because when you try to control a child, they resist. Or they become overly compliant. They become the good kid, the good little girl, the good little boy, in fear of losing their parents' love. So you'll often see in a family a rebellious child and a very compliant child. And we talk about, actually, in screen-free parenting, there is a middle road, so that they don't have to be rebellious or overly compliant.
And with both of those examples, both of their children, in their own way, are actually screaming.
They are, absolutely. That's a very good point. And if you talk to, and I've spent a lot of time talking to parents, one of the first things I asked them was how they were parented. And what do they remember from their childhood? And they often say, oh, my brother was the rebellious one. I was the good kid. I was the one my parents didn't have to worry about. And, you know, and I've had parents say, oh, this other one is so easygoing and so sweet and just a perfect daughter or son. And they are the ones that have become the compliant children. Another reason I was able, and it was important that I write this book, was for myself, from my own childhood. And what I experienced.
Bonnie, I'm going to ask you to let us take a break, and then when we come back, I'd like to hear more about your own childhood experiences.
Sure.
Folks, don't go away. We are having a conversation with Bonnie Compton, who is the author of Mothering with Courage. You're never too old, and it's never too late to learn about mothering. We'll be right back. Bonnie, as you've reflected on your own childhood and your own experiences, what comes up?
Well, it's interesting. I often say about my childhood, it could have been a lot worse, but it could have been a lot better. I have had, my both parents are deceased now, two parents that did the best they could. But my mom was had undiagnosed borderline personality disorder. My dad was an alcoholic. They loved us, my brothers and I, the best they could. However, what was left was the messages that we received growing up. So in my family, I became the compliant daughter, the good little girl, the peacemaker in the family, the one who was hypervigilant, watching, because I never knew what was going to happen next. And I often ask parents when I talk with them, you know, when you reflect back to your childhood, if you could think of one word that captures the essence of your childhood, what might that one word be? So some parents will say loving, playful, positive messages that they received. Others say angry, troubled. My word is uncertain. I was never certain what was going to happen in the family, and you become hypervigilant. And so when I ask parents this question, what I also ask them is, if your child were to be asked this question 30 years from now, what one word would you want them to say that captures the essence of their childhood? And that really gives parents pause in terms of what are they creating in the relationship. So anyway, growing up in the family that I did, I received many messages, and I talk about one of them in particular in the book. And messages matter to kids. I have, as a child and adolescent therapist for many years, and I was a pediatric nurse practitioner before, I have witnessed over and over again the messages that children are receiving. I've had kids tell me, if I were a better kid, my family would be happier. Everything would be okay if I wasn't such a bad kid. And they're not a bad kid. They're making choices. Their behavior is sometimes not a good choice, appears to be bad behavior, but they're not bad. But children receive messages on a daily basis, and they share them with the world. They take them out into their adult life. And we see a lot of wounded adults walking around and a lot of reactive, defensive adults. And so in addition to wanting moms to really find the answers within themselves, I want parents to realize that messages do matter. And we unconsciously send messages to our kids. It's out of our own fear or frustration. But I see this bigger vision of if parents mindfully send healthy messages to their kids, and healthy messages grow healthy children. And then kids grow up into adulthood, and they take these healthy messages out into the world. What a different place. The ripple effect would be huge.
Be extraordinary.
And I'm a big vision. I just believe in my heart in possibilities of change, despite the fact that when we turn on the news, what we see, that if each one of us is doing our part, and I want moms to know, parents, but moms who are reading this book, they have an amazing opportunity to shape their children's future, not by controlling them, but by guiding them, and really will help generations heal. And, you know, one of Maya Angelou's quotes that she said that I love is, they may forget what you said, but they will never forget how you made them feel. And we all take messages, even in our adult lives, and remember how we were made to feel. Moms have this amazing ability.
Give us an example of a mixed message that parents unwittingly may give their children.
Okay. It could be as simple as a child spills their milk, and which kids do, right? they knock over their milk. And if we're tired, we're frustrated, it's the third or fourth time they've knocked it over, how many times do I have to tell you, what is wrong with you? You can't even keep your cup on the table? That's a shaming message. And it's done out of frustration. It's like, oh my gosh, we have to clean this up again. Instead of pausing, taking a deep breath, as I tell parents, take time off and have your kids take time off to calm their brains down, the limbic portion of their brain to calm it down, and then say, oops, that milk spilled again. Help me clean it up. Let's figure out a way to prevent this from happening. Do you want a lid on top of the cup, or how about if we put it in a different kind of cup or put it farther away from your plate so your arm doesn't, versus the message, like, how many times do I have to tell you? What is wrong with you?
So instead of teaching your child that they're wrong, you begin to teach them problem-solving skills and that they can have an impact on their environment.
Absolutely, absolutely, yes, and that they're not bad for doing this. I'm looking actually in my book right now, Mixed Messages We Send Our Children. You can tell me anything, anytime, and then when they come to you with something, just not that. It's like, I can't bear to hear this.
Right.
That's a mix. Hands are not for hitting, except when I spank you. It's not okay to yell unless it's me yelling at you. Those are mixed messages.
Let me ask you about spanking, because, you know, as you know, I mean, there are parents who believe that a child should never be hit in anger or as a way of punishment. Never, ever, ever. And then there are other parents who believe, you know, if it was good enough for me, it's good enough for you. And particularly in those households where the grandparents are perhaps the primary caregivers, so they really grew up in a different time. How do you want parents to think about the notion of spanking or hitting their children?
Well, it's interesting because we moved 8 years ago from Maryland to South Carolina. And in Maryland, for the most part, spanking was not okay. And it's very accepted here, not by all parents in South Carolina. And I ask parents, not in judgment, do you think it works? And they often say no. And what some tell me is, my child is now hitting me. But what they say is, I don't know what else to do. It becomes a last resort. Now, Hal Runkle of Screen Free Parenting will say, I'm not saying whether to spank or not, but I'm saying, spank, if you're going to do it, be mindful that you're doing it and why you're doing it. And again, I have worked with parents, well, it worked for me, just as you said, and I said, tell me how it worked for you. Well, I feared my parents. And so I did what they said, because I feared them. I said, so what is your relationship with your parents now? Oh, I don't really like to be around them much. And I said, how would it be if you were able to raise your child to be responsible, to make choices for themselves without ever feeling the need to control them, spank them, yell at them? And they said, that would be pretty amazing, but how is that going to happen? And then I help walk them through the steps of how that happens. And it's also time with timeout. And have we all used timeout? Absolutely. I used to use timeout. Timeout really is ineffective.
It's ineffective.
Ineffective.
Okay.
And it's often overused. And for some kids, it's traumatic, especially kids who need that connection with you. And if they're put in timeout and they're told to sit there, and they're told to think about what they did wrong. Well, most kids aren't sitting there thinking about what they did wrong. They're either sitting there getting more angry that you've put them in timeout, or if they're anxious kids and have fear of abandonment, well, they've just been abandoned. And they often have a difficult time calming themselves down, so timeout makes it worse for them. So this is not to say that a child is not to be held responsible or to have consequences for their behavior. Absolutely, consequences are important. But spanking, what is spanking teaching? Is what I would be curious about. What is it actually teaching?
And when you ask that question, what kind of responses do you get from parents?
They often look at me, and they sometimes some of them say it's teaching them not to do it again.
Right.
And I said, because they fear another spanking. I said, do you want your relationship based on fear? How would it be if instead, you know, parents, one of the problems, and this is the number one question I get from parents all the time, why won't my child listen to me? And my answer is because you've trained them not to. And we all have done this. Parents who say, tell a child 5 times, 10 times, it's time to get ready for bed. And then the parent gets angry by the 5th or 10th time and yells. And the kid says, why are you yelling at me? Because you're not listening to me. Well, I said, I tell parents, think about this. If you knew your boss was going to tell you 5 or 10 times to get a report done, and you knew you could push the envelope and not get it done because you really didn't want to do it in the first place, until they raise their voice and then you do it, that's what kids are doing. And so it's so easy to become kind of this broken record, kind of like the Charlie Brown parent of the cartoons, wah, 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 wah. Kids tune us out after a while. Whereas if we learn to make requests and mean what we say and we're going to follow through on it, not by threatening, not by spanking, yelling, kids learn responsibility instead of learning that they can push the envelope until we lose our cool or that they're going to get spanked. Then they begin to choose responsible behavior for themselves, and that is the key. You want your child to choose the appropriate behavior for themselves, not for you. I had a mom sitting in my office one day, and she was getting frustrated with some of my suggestions, and because she wanted me to fix her child. She wanted me to fix her behavior, and I said, she's not broken. And I said, what is your ultimate goal in with your daughter, your parenting goal? That she listens to me. I said, okay. What about when she's outside of your home? What about when she's at school, when she's at church, when she's with a play date? Do you want the ultimate goal for her to be able to listen to you or to listen to herself? And that is a big shift for parents. But when you're trying to get your child to listen to you, there's a form of control around that. Whereas don't we want kids to learn responsible behavior for themselves so when they go out into the world, they're making appropriate choices, not just at home because the parents are watching?
So for the parent who says, if I just let my child move forward making his own choices or her own choices, they're going to fill in the blanks. Not go to school, not eat their dinner, they're going to burn the house down, they're going to have bad friends.
Oh, this is not hands-free, let them go wild parenting.
Ah.
No, what I'm talking about is providing the guidance, the consequences for the choice of their behavior, and allowing their child to experience the consequences of their behavior. This is where helicopter parenting kind of stem from. Not allowing a child to experience the consequences of their behavior. So say, for example, your teen does not study for an exam. And as a parent, you know that exam is coming up. Well, often what happens is parents, particularly moms, but not always the case, become more and more anxious because they know the exam, the final exam, is looming overhead. And their child, their teen's doing nothing about it. They'd rather be social. They'd rather be on their, you know, Facebook, Instagram, whatever. And the more the mom or the dad says, study for that exam, I know, and the more the teen resists, right? So all of a sudden, it's the night before, and the teen is panicking because they haven't studied for the test or the morning of. So a parent who parents from their own anxiety and doesn't want their child to suffer might write a note saying my child was sick or let the teen stay home that day, miss the exam, send in a note, you know, they were sick, can they retake the exam? versus a parent who is guiding their child while allowing them to experience the consequences of their choice, would say, this is a decision you made. Today is the exam. Go do the best you can. And then having a conversation with them afterwards, if they get a poor grade, not saying, I told you, you should have studied, but how do you feel about it? What do you want to do differently next time? Use it as a learning opportunity, but allowing the child to experience the consequence. So it's not hands off, let them do whatever they want. It's, these are the consequences of the choices. It's like a mom who takes her child to school every day and battles with the child every day about not being on time. Well, there's a consequence when you're late. You want to try to pair the consequence with the actual behavior, so it's not something so over the top and it's not even related. But it's a consequence of their choice.
And so what I'm hearing, again, is relatively early on and consistently, you're teaching your child that your child has an impact on their environment, on their experiences, and you're not taking away all the decision-making power. I think about, you know, the parents who will sit with the child for hours on end. Child has a homework assignment, and the parent is exhausted at the end of it because he or she has put in so much more energy than the child.
Exactly. And so a consequence of that would be, and this is not to punish the child, but, you know, sometimes parents end up doing the homework for the child, which really is a disservice to the child because the teacher then thinks the child understands when truly they don't.
Right.
And so saying to the child, you know, now some kids hate homework, and if they have attention issues, ADHD, ADD, they may have a difficult time sitting there, and that's a whole other topic of conversation I could talk about and how to help kids with that. But saying, you know, chunking the homework down into, okay, you've got 10 minutes left. Also saying you have 10 minutes left, not we. That's an important distinction that I talk with parents about. Be careful about your language. Mm-hmm. Anytime you're saying we, I've seen moms in particular, this is not bashing moms, this is that say we are applying for college, we are studying for the SAT. And I said, what part of we? Are you going to college with her? And in the therapy world, we call that enmeshment, where they're too close. I'm always leery of moms and teens when teens say, my mom is my best friend.
Yeah.
Not that they shouldn't have a close relationship, but that teen needs to learn to be their own individual. We call it individuate. So when you say to a child, we need, then what responsibility do they need to take with their homework or with their own behavior?
Bonnie, we're going to take a break, and when we come back, you talk about different parenting styles, and we've been talking about it thus far, but I'd like for you to share with us some of the titles, if you will, and some of the behaviors that you've identified with each of those parenting skills. Folks, we will continue talking with Bonnie Compton and Mothering with Courage right after the break. You've identified different parenting styles. Let's start with authoritarian. What kind of parent is that?
Okay. And yes, these styles were developed by Diane Baumrind, and she refers to them, I mean, just as there's different personality types, there's often different parenting styles. So authoritarian parent would be one with very rigid rules, very rule-governed, and their kids are expected to follow those rules. And there's often the fear-based punishment, such as spanking, such as, you know, other things for the discipline. The kids really are not given choices, and they don't learn from it because they're not given the ability to learn from the consequences of their choices. So, you know, if you think back to do it because I said so, I'm the parent, I know what's best, that's really the authoritarian parent.
Okay. The indulgent parent?
The indulgent parent is there, you know, there's very little rules. They give in to their kids a lot. There's very little limit setting. These are the parents that want to be their child's best friend. I want them to like me. I don't want them to hate me.
So is this the kind of parent who would have, for example, a co-ed party in the house and there's alcohol available and the kids are 16?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes. Yes. They don't want their child to be angry. They want to be their child's best friend. I always tell parents, they're going to have many best friends. They're only going to have two parents if they're lucky. They don't need another best friend.
Right. The uninvolved parent.
This is the parent who really, they often lack parenting skills. They didn't have good role models in their own parents. So there's little to no rules. They're kind of hands-off. They're often unaware of what their kids are doing. They just trust that the kids are fine. And often it becomes a situation of neglect, even if the parents are around, but they're really not nurturing and guiding their children. And these kids often end up raising themselves.
And I would think that you would agree that these different parenting styles can happen across economic lines, across...
Absolutely.
Okay. All right.
Absolutely, yes. Yeah.
You also...
Parents of means that want to be their child's best friend will often just buy them whatever they want. And it becomes one gift after another. And it doesn't take long for the kids to realize this is what my relationship with my parent is. They just give me things.
And they don't learn about healthy parenting themselves.
Right, absolutely. And they don't have the deep connection, the actual relationship with their parent.
Okay. The authoritative parent, as distinguished from the authoritarian parent, what's the difference?
This is the parent, and this is really a goal to strive for, where you have rules, but they're not rigid. They're not set in stone. So, for example, your teen has a midnight curfew, but they're going out for prom or special date or whatever, and so you're willing to say, you know, for this special occasion, your curfew can be 12:30 or 1 o'clock. It's not, the curfew is midnight and you know that and don't ask me to change it. There's consequences rather than disciplining in a punitive manner. You're not trying to punish the child in a negative, punitive manner. You're allowing them to experience the consequences. And also you provide positive consequences, praise, rewards, you know, et cetera. But there's limits set. There's boundaries. And the child feels safe. Even kids who seem to want all the control, they don't. That's too frightening for them. They want you to be the parent they can trust, that you are going to show up, be consistent, be fair, and help guide them.
So the child who is, in theory, always trying to push the envelope, you're a terrible parent, you want to know who my friends are, you're trying to tell me what to do, I hate you, I hate you, I hate you. What does a parent do with that?
First, you acknowledge how they're feeling.
Okay.
Rather than take it personally and react. Again, this is learning to respond, because the reactive parent, we've all done this, how dare you say that to me? As much as I've done for you, da-da-da-da-da, fill in the blank. Instead of, I see you're really angry. I understand that you want to do this. And in our house, this is the rule. You know, in my own experience, my husband and I parenting our kids, I mean, how many times did it come out of their mouth? It's not fair. My friends all have credit cards, or my friends all have cell phones, or they get to go to all these parties. Our oldest daughter actually thanked her husband the day after party that we did not let her go to because there was drinking involved and police were called.
Interesting.
And she said she knew it at the time. She told us later that she shouldn't go, but she fought us like crazy. And so I, the other day, I have a woman that's working with me to help get word out about Mothering with Courage, and she has helped me create some posts for Instagram, and she's taken quotes from the book, which I love, and one of them was about don't avoid saying no. And how many times as parents are we fearful of saying no? We're trying to keep the peace. We don't want that meltdown. Parents I sat with yesterday said, but if we say no, we're going to have a major meltdown. And I said, your child is going to have, either they're going to have a meltdown or not. And there's a way to say no. You say, you acknowledge, yes, I understand you want that cookie right now, and let's figure out a time you can when it's not right before dinner. I understand you want that play date. Let's look at the calendar and see when we can schedule it. Try to say yes as much as possible, but don't avoid saying no.
Okay. And that's so important in terms of teaching limits, setting boundaries, just helping the child to exercise not only their no muscle, but their choice muscles.
Right. Yes, absolutely. Because throughout life, they are going to be told no. I mean, I've seen a real pattern where parents are saying, my child is fine until they're told no. And so the parents then fear saying no because there's going to be a major meltdown. And it becomes learned behavior on both the child and the parent's part.
And goodness knows what that child's life is going to turn into as he or she tries to blossom into adulthood with that kind of, it's really a handicap.
Absolutely, absolutely. So we do a disservice to our kids when we don't have the courage. And again, this goes back to mothering with courage. It takes courage to show up and be the mom who's going to be there right alongside helping guide the child, but saying no when you need to say no.
You focus a lot on the value of intuition. And I would suggest certainly for new parents, relying on their intuition may be an unsettling kind of prospect. What do you want folks to understand about intuition?
I want everyone listening to understand, whether they know it or not, we all are intuitive. If you think back to a time in your life where just this, you heard this voice, you had this feeling in your heart, I shouldn't do this, or I should do it, but you didn't act on it. And later you said, oh gosh, I wish I had listened to myself. That is intuition. I talk about a story in my book about when I worked as a pediatric nurse practitioner, a mom who brought her daughter just for a sports physical. She was 15 years old. And mom said, do you mind just checking this mole on her back? I said, sure. Well, I looked at it. In my clinical knowledge, I thought, no, the borders are clean. It doesn't look like anything. But I heard the mom say, I just don't have a good feeling about it. I said, you know what? I'm going to give you a referral to the dermatologist. That 15-year-old girl was diagnosed with melanoma. Had the mom not listened to her own inner knowing, she may not have called it intuition, but she said, I just don't have a good feeling about it. And she said it, and I heard it.
And both are equally important, to be able to say it and to be able to hear it.
Yes, yes. So if you get a kind of a tingly feeling in your body or just this knowing, don't try to talk yourself out of it. Because what we often do, it's easy, especially in the busyness of our daily lives, is to ignore those inner voices. I think, isn't it Oprah that says, first you receive a whisper, and then you receive a louder voice, and then pretty soon if you haven't listened, they hit you over the top of the head with a 2x4. That is intuition, and everybody has this ability. It's not some woo-woo thing out there. It's we all have it within. but we've just gotten so busy in our lives, we've stopped listening. And so this is what I really want. Many other things I want moms to learn from this journey through this book, and it is a journey. There are journaling prompts at the end of each chapter to help moms find their own answer. But to remember, first look within. Now, I've joked I could be talking myself out of a job for parents reaching out to me. And I also love when parents have their own knowing and they still are looking to fine-tune with guidance. And that's what I love to do. But I want them to tap into their own knowing because they really know. I tell parents, you are your best child's parenting expert. I'm just here to help you find the answers.
And that's so important. I would say particularly for moms at either end of the spectrum, those who are new moms, young and new moms, and those who perhaps have waited until later on in their lives to become moms, that sense that they do have an intuitive awareness, a skill, an ability is so important. And I think it's easy for them to not believe themselves.
Right. And then if they reach out and you know, there's so many mommy bloggers, and there's nothing wrong with any of this. The information out there, you can Google. I mean, there is so much information out there. But how do you sort through this? How do you discern what really matters? And this is the key. What matters to your child, yourself, your family? That's really what is the most important. It doesn't matter how another mom is doing something, another family. And sadly, there's a lot of mommy bashing going on and judgment among mothers.
True.
And you see it online. And, you know, and the moms feel bad about themselves. After I got the publishing contract for Mothering with Courage, this was not to be the title. I had a couple of other titles over the past 9 years. And the publisher, well, they came up with their own, and they sent me a sample with the cover they created. And I didn't even know they were doing this, and I love working with Familius Publishing. They've been amazing. And what they sent me was, it was the Mom Makeover. And it was a cute book and a short title and the Mom Makeover, and I thought, and inside I heard my own knowing going, no, 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 this is not the message in this book. And I wrote back to them, the president, Christopher Robbins, and he listened. And I said, Christopher, I do not want to contribute to the messages being sent to moms that they're not good enough.
That they need a makeover.
They need a makeover. This is not the message in this book. The message is, you are doing an amazing job, and you've got this, moms. And it's tough. It takes courage to show up, to be a mom in the trenches, but to listen to yourself. Figure out what really matters. Connect with your kids. Have fun. Find the joy again in motherhood. Listen to yourself, your kids, and worry less. And again, love deeply, as the subtitle says. But I want moms to know they have it within themselves. And this book really, there's parenting advice. There's 12 different chapters. But at the end, and this is the important piece, I want moms to take the time to journal, and because that's where they will find their own answers. And to know that those answers may change a year from now. They can go back 5 years ago and look at this book. And my hope was, I had journaling lines in the original, but the book got too long, and so they were taken out. I'm hoping down the road, I'm setting my intention, that there will be a journal to accompany this book.
Oh, that would be wonderful.
And actually, I hadn't thought about this, but I'm offering gift set giveaways. So I have paired it with a journal and a Mothering with Courage pen and a bookmark. And Pamela, I'm just going to offer to you, if you want, for your listeners, I'd be happy to, you know, gift one of these sets to one of the listeners. And you know, if you're interested, let me know, and you can decide how to do that.
That would be wonderful. And you also have at your website lots of information, including an ebook. Can you give us your website address?
Yes, it's www.parentingpartners.info. There's a lot of free advice, ebook. I, for 2 years, hosted Wholehearted Parenting Radio. So there's, and I'm planning to get back to that at some point now that the book is done. Lots of free advice, videos, that sort of thing. And I love working with parents. I love working with both moms and dads. I have a private practice here in Charleston, South Carolina, but I also do a lot of parent coaching over the phone. And it only takes a few sessions, and parents are like, oh my gosh, you haven't even met my kids, and things are so much better at home.
That's wonderful. Let's have that website address one more time.
Okay, parentingpartners.info. And I'm on Facebook and Instagram and Twitter and all of that, social media.
There you go.
Not that I have a hard time keeping up with, but anyway.
I understand. Thank you so much, Bonnie Compton, author of Mothering with Courage. Thank you again. And folks, thank you for joining us today on this edition of Mind Talk. Mind Talk is brought to you daily as an educational public service, and it is not intended to replace any work that you might choose to do with a licensed medical, mental health, or other professional. Mind Talk is produced by Jim Brown and 26x2 Communications, and it is available to you on demand by going to mindtalk.org. That's MYNDTALK.org. You can also subscribe to the Mind Talk podcast via iTunes. You can download the Mind Talk app from the iTunes Store or from Google Play. So there are lots of opportunities to listen to Mind Talk when you choose, as you choose. And I'd love to get an email from you. I'd love to know where in the world you are as you're listening to this edition of Mind Talk. Do send an email to Pamela, P-A-M-E-L-A, at MindTalk, MYNDTALK.org. And folks, remember always, if it's unacceptable, then it's unacceptable. You take care.